got an incredible show for you today on the Antimatter Radio Show, August 20, 2009, 4 p.m. Eastern, live from West Lafayette, Indiana, where it's a beautiful, windy day, storms all around. It's a, you can think of it as a wild afternoon, just the way I like it. Today we're finishing up our interview with James Nienhuis, author of Ice Age Civilizations and Old Earth, Why Not? I'm going to keep him for 45 minutes or an hour, and then I've got a number of things to cover after that. So this is definitely something you don't want to miss. A lot of times people, I had James on to talk a lot about Ice Age Civilizations, but we ended up talking a lot about Young Earth creationism, or just the theory of a young Earth. We didn't really talk about creationism. That's what I wanted to talk to him about, the theory that the Earth is not as old as many scientists think. James Nienhuis thinks it's extremely young, 6,000 years. Now, I don't agree with James about that, but I will say this. My faith in how old the Earth is, as given to me by the mainstream academic scientists, has been severely damaged. There's all kinds of reasons why I have found why their information about the Earth being the age that it is in serious question. And there's a lot of issues which are being pointed out by people like James Nienhuis that need to be pointed out. Now, we had Walter Cruttenden on 2 weeks ago, and he has information about the Earth being possibly older than 6,000 years, you know, maybe 100,000 or 200,000 years old. That's probably, at this stage in my life, probably the number I would put on the Earth, the age of the Earth. Now, a lot of times when you talk about young Earth, people instantly think of Christianity, think it's a theory for just Christianity, and that's fine, but I am a Buddhist. I'm not a Christian, and just because I hold the thesis that the Earth is not the age that the university professors give us does not imply anything about my religious positions. I'm just merely following the evidence as I'm trying to gather it, the pure and simple evidence, not the fads or the peer pressure of somebody trying to get me to believe some theory in order to keep tenure for a teaching position or in order to fit in with a group or believe what I heard on TV or something like that. I'm just following the evidence. Okay, so the theory that the Earth is young is one that I thought was extremely important to bring out on this radio show, and that's why we're doing that. I can't think of really a better guest. One of the other guests I wanted to get on to discuss this was a person named Kent Hovind, who's currently in prison, however, because he didn't want to pay the criminals in Washington, D.C. their tax money in order to carry out wars to kill people in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iraq and everywhere else, pretty much, including here in the United States. So we couldn't get him on, needless to say, because he is in prison. So the idea of the Earth being not the age of that we're being told by academic mainstream professors in America is has enormous strength when you consider just a few things. For example, the Grand Canyon, the way the Colorado River flows through Grand Canyon, should provide a delta, okay, kind of like the Mississippi River does and down in Louisiana. There should be a delta that forms the way the river is structured, if the river has been flowing through there for millions and millions of years, creating that canyon. However, there is no delta. Okay, so it makes you wonder about the age of the Grand Canyon, since there's that contradiction. If you recall, last week we talked about how Mount St. Helens created in Washington, right near the exploded volcano, a canyon that looks a lot like a mini Grand Canyon, and they created it in just a few weeks. Okay, so your mind starts to wonder even more then. Now, here's one thing that I find utterly shocking. When you look at petrified trees, we all know about the sedimentary stratification layers that we have pounded into our minds in school, and that this is supposedly proof that the Earth is billions of years old. Okay, fine. There's one problem. All over the world, there are cases where there are petrified trees that stick up across more than one layer of more than one stratification layer, sedimentary layer. Okay, now this doesn't make any sense at all, especially since it's happened, since there's been so many cases where this has been found. That's a completely devastating issue to find if you're an old Earth theorist or if you think the layers of stratification and sediment are millions and or billions of years old. You simply can't find petrified trees crossing the sedimentary layers. That would be like saying, well, while the sedimentary layers gathered and formed into stone in some mysterious way, the trees stood there for millions of years without decaying before they turned into petrified trees. Now, this doesn't make any sense. Okay, and this needs to be answered by all of our eminent academic professors who are out there confidently telling us the Earth is 4.3 billion years old. We need to have answers for these things. There is a discovery waiting here, okay? And we don't want to have indoctrination, brainwashing, and mind control. We want to have learning and discovery. So there's something shocking lurking here that needs to be addressed. Okay? And there's other things, too. I am under the impression that in the 1800s, the geologists labeled and dated these old eras, like the Jurassic, Triassic, and so forth, all these eras, before carbon dating and any of these other dating methods existed. Okay, now that's very mysterious, because kind of we're led to the impression nowadays that we've gotten these eras from the professional academics about the Jurassic era and other eras from the dating, but if the eras were invented before the dating, there's something very strange going on here, which maybe I don't understand something, and maybe some of the academics can help me out, but I'm very confused on if I'm reading this correctly and how this could be. And there are other things, too, that I don't understand about professional academics. They want to tell us that a lot of the, I mean, I often hear them telling me, for example, that the age of a rock is determined by the fossils that they find in it, and then they'll turn around and say, the fossils determine the age of a rock. Okay, so that's obviously circular reasoning, and when I was a graduate student in philosophy, if you put that in any of your papers, they would probably kick you out of the program. It would be such a silly, ridiculous error. Okay, so there's just huge questions. I could go on. There's many others. They're just simply ignored by the academics, or if they're not ignored, and if you bring them up, they laugh at you. As the, let's just put it simple here. The academics, not all of them. Well, there's a lot of good people in academia, but they do have a tendency to try to think that the only way information can come is through them. They're the last call on all sorts of information. I was just watching on Alex Jones on his website, Infowars.com, today. He's got a Greenpeace, one of these communists from Greenpeace, who, of course, that's just paid off, but they're just basically paid off by the politicians. Henry Paulson, former CEO of Goldman Sachs, and he's the one who was behind the banker bailout last fall, if you remember, which robbed us all of trillions of dollars for this phony economic recovery that's going on. He's the head of the Nature Conservancy. I mean, that pretty much sums things up right there. That connects a lot of dots on what the whole point of this politician-driven ecology, green, global warming movement going on is. But anyways, back to the point. I was watching Alex Jones, and he's got a guy from Greenpeace on his show discussing how they didn't really have any a lot of the data they put out on the melting of the ice caps, of the ice cap in Greenland, was just kind of made up. You can go watch that video on Infowars.com right now. So there's just a lot of the problem here really is that the American people are just going along with this. They'll believe what they're told. They're trained since they were a child. If you don't agree with what your eminent teachers tell you, you get an F. So it's sort of we're programmed to think this way, that we believe, not think. Like Rockefeller, the Rockefeller education system, which we all are victims of in this country, is one where we're created to be workers, not thinkers. Okay, so just kind of a sad situation, I would say, to put it nicely. But anyways, I'd like to keep going with our interview with James Nienhuis here. James has a number of websites. you can check out his information. One of them is Ice Age Civilizations. Is that right, Jim?
Yes. Civilizations.com.
Tell us about some of your websites and some of your books available and how we can find out more about you.
Yeah, my blog site is dancingfromgenesis.com. You know, dancing from Genesis, G-E-N-E-S-I-S.com. I blog at least daily on that. Short articles in all areas of much of what we'll touch on here, and you can access the other websites through it.
Great. Okay. And now I noticed, don't you have some of your books for free on your website?
Yeah, the free ebook download of my first book, Old Earth, Why Not, which is a compendium of all the plethora of arguments for the young Earth, including astronomy, why those stars need not be billions of years old. In fact, they must be young, actually, according to Einstein's theory of general relativity and gravitational time dilation. I cover the fossilization, which you spoke of, in the sedimentary layers, reeking of catastrophism. Which is the mainstream geologists are actually coming to acknowledge. They're calling it localized catastrophism within the geologic record. But then they must reconcile, well, why is it these episodes are connected by catastrophism also, all through the geologic column? You know, vast layers of sedimentary material stacked like pancakes in the plains, with billions of marine creatures entombed therein, you know, from the ocean. You know, 99% of the creatures or marine creatures within the sedimentary rocks, say, in Kansas. So obviously the ocean was up on there, laying down contiguous, sequential sedimentary layers. And the mountains rose at the close of the flood year because those same sediments, Jeff, which composed the flat-lying layers in the plains, where they were compressed and folded in the mountains, the folded layers don't have radial cracks in them, which you'd expect if you get a flat slab of rock and bend it, it will crack. But within those bent sedimentary layers, which should be hard if they're billions of years old when the upthrusting and compression occurred, there should be these radial tension cracks, but they're not, proving that those layers were still soft when they were folded.
Yeah, it's there's just another interesting question. Tell us, Jim, about the young stars issue that you just brought up.
Sure. You know, the Big Bang Theory presupposes that there was a beginning point, a center point, if you will, where the dense matter expanded from. And thereby, as the matter expanded out and still ostensibly is expanding out, you must have an outer edge, a boundary of the matter, because you have a center. Because you have a beginning point, it's a 3D circumstance, three-dimensional circumstance. Therefore, by definition, you must have a boundary, a sphere of the matter, if you will. But the Big Bangers, within their theory, they don't acknowledge this necessity for a boundary, an edge of the expanded matter, by saying that the universe is limitless and matter is homogeneously distributed through this limitless universe. But that contradicts the thesis of a beginning point and thereby a necessitated boundary. But if they acknowledge this necessitated boundary by their Big Bang beginning point, then gravitational time dilation must have been in play during the early days of the creation when the matter was expanding out and the planets and stars were coalescing. Therefore, thereby, those distant stars need not be billions of years old and necessarily are not billions of years old if the Big Bangers were consistent with their presuppositions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Jim, what do you think about some of the if you're coming from not an intelligent design perspective, but some of the things about the universe or the solar system. For example, our moon is exactly, when you see an eclipse, the moon is the same size as the sun, more or less. I mean, the moon has an elliptical orbit around the Earth, so it varies a little bit, but the average is would make it exactly the same size as the sun. So the sun is 400 times farther than the moon is from the Earth, and the moon is 1/400th the size of the sun, and so therefore they appear to be exactly the same size.
Right.
I mean, that's Isaac Asimov said that's such an unfathomable coincidence that it shouldn't even be. And then there's other things about, when I was on the...
I've never heard nor thought about that. That is one of those fantastic indications of design. You know, to mention in my ancient mapping finding, which I know you're familiar with, the wobble rate of the Earth's axis just happens to be 25,920 years per cycle, which is a base 6 number out of which fell the Chaldean base 60 sexagesimal system, not to mention how the ancients surveyed the dimensions for the Great Pyramid of Giza in Egypt. That's explained at that website, dancingfromgenesis.com, under category ancient navigation. So, yeah, I mean, back to what you were saying, just another indication of incredible design. No coincidences.
Yeah, it sure doesn't stop there. I'm just getting going with, when I was on the Alex Jones show back in March and then they reran the show a couple months later, I discussed how in New Grange, the temple in Ireland, that temple was devoted to an incredible principle, which goes as follows. The sun and the moon at the summer solstice and the winter solstice follow the exact same trajectory in the sky inverted. In other words, the exact path of the moon at the winter solstice is where the sun travels at the summer solstice. And
wow.
And I mean, in that there's these canals.
Wow, I hadn't heard that one either. That's awesome.
Yeah, I learned that in a book called Who Built the Moon by, I'm looking for it here on my bookshelf and I don't see it. The New Grange Temple built by some ancient peoples.
The Atlanteans, according to the Young Earth thesis, the Ice Age ended late. Those were Atlanteans, the northern fringe of them, where all the tin mines were. In Cornwall, the Isles of Scilly, ruins now submerged off Scilly. That's where the rich tin mines were, where they made bronze with the copper in the 2000 BC time frame. One of the few big tin deposits in the ancient world.
Yeah, so we've got, it's just, you know, when the two, that's just two issues. I mean, I could keep going. There's a book called Beginnings by Bonnie Gant.
Those are were the Formorians, incidentally. The Fermuaks, Formorians from Morocco. Fer meant tree or human. Formorian, men from Morocco. Right there in the shadow of the Atlas Mountains in Gibraltar, where all the submerged ruins are now, off at least 7 sites in the Gibraltar area, which I mentioned in my articles there at that website.
The book I was just referring to is Beginnings by Bonnie Gount. She discusses throughout her book all these different issues in our DNA and how sound, the mathematics of sound and the solar system. You've got all these numbers like 5, 2, 8, and then numbers that are very spiritual like 15 and 18. And then, of course, the New World Order, which I don't know how much you want to discuss that, but that's something I discussed quite a bit in this show. You see them using numbers like, they use those numbers inverted. They use 51 and 81 in various military operations and so forth that they use. So you have all this not only interesting indication, which is pretty much simple proof that there is intelligent design or whatever you want to call it. That term is a little bit abused these days. But there's all this incredible...
Well, you can either call it intelligent design or just a series of amazing coincidences. I think we're faced with a choice there.
Yeah, but the amazing coincidences gets to be impossible. I mean, you can't have quadrillion, quadrillion, quadrillion to one coincidences, but then, 50 of them. I mean, then you're talking about no more coincidence. And then on top of that, you also have... A situation where the rulers of the world know about this information, don't disclose it to us, and then seem to want to put it in their architecture in an inverted way. It almost makes you think, now, like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm not a Christian, I'm a Buddhist, but you're a Christian, it sure does make the claim in the Bible that there's an evil force called the devil that's the controller of this world that sure does bring some credibility to that.
Absolutely. I think, demonic, human behaviors, sometimes certainly manifest. I mean, there's people can do some things that are almost beyond the, there's definitely evil in the world, put it that way. No one will deny that.
Yeah, if you just open up any book of history, it's, I can't even really believe what we're doing.
Well, for instance, human sacrifice, child sacrifice back in the day, you know, way back when, unbelievable. And that was in the guise of doing right,
yeah.
You know?
Worldwide, yeah, exactly. Yeah, pretty amazing stuff. What do you think about the idea? There's a lot of talk, not in the mainstream press, but in very large alternative press, such as what's called alternative press, such as Coast to Coast AM or the Alex Jones Show, that there is currently in process a evil plan by a secretive government that is demonic in nature to take over and really make things pretty miserable for us in the future. That, to me, that sounds biblical, and I'm asking you that since you're a Christian, and I call that group the New World Order. I'm just wondering what you think, what your take is on all this.
Yeah, as an amateur prophecy guy, Ezekiel 38, I think, is next on the horizon, which is where Russia and her apparently Islam, or obviously Islamic Nation allies will attack Israel and get crushed. And after Israel crushes them, that's when the Antichrist steps in to say, peace, yeah.
That's in Ezekiel 38?
Right.
Wow, I didn't even know that, because that's exactly what I've been thinking. I said that on Dr. Deagle's radio show not a while back, that it seems pretty obvious that we're getting ready for some conflict between Arab nations and Israel, and what's going to happen is the nukes are going to fly, and we know who's got more nukes.
Yeah.
So
the Bible's real explicit about the fate of the attackers. Yeah, it's pretty gnarly, as we say.
Doesn't it say a bunch of things about Russia, too? Do you know anything?
Oh, they're in the Confederacy that attacks Israel and gets their butt kicked.
Is that where?
Yeah,
that
guess we mentioned is Gog and Magog. Russia is known as
right.
and Magog.
Right. That's pretty interesting.
Gog and Magog and all her Confederacy. It mentions Persia, Libya, I forget the others, but three, and they're just obviously right there, the current Confederacy. Libya, I think, also is mentioned.
Now, James, a lot of people, I'm going to play the devil's advocate here. Now, I just to let you know, I'm pretty, I've got a pretty high opinion of the Bible, and I kind of go along with believing a lot of things about prophecy and so forth that are in it, but I'm going to play the devil's advocate. A lot of people say, well, we can prove the Bible is correct and so forth because, you know, 500 years ago, 2,500 years ago, somebody made a prophecy that something 2,000 years ago would happen, and so therefore the Bible's proven to be true. I mean, that's like, what I could say, though, is someone could come along and just write both things down after the fact and just say, in other words, I could tell you now.
Sure, doctorate, you know, after the fact, yeah.
Yeah, I could come along and say, hey, Jim, you know, in 1999 I wrote that on 9/11 there's going to be a terrorist attack in New York City, and then it came true. But I really wrote it down yesterday.
Right.
What's your response to that?
Dead Sea Scrolls, hidden from the world for 50 years, which had all the Old Testament written or recorded in various scrolls found at various locations. But amongst all of them was the entire Old Testament, sans, I believe it was the book of Ruth or Esther, all but the book of Ruth or Esther. Commonly acknowledged by even the secularists to have been written in the 300 to 100 BC time frame. And all those prophecies, there's 48 major ones, which I go into chapter 23 of my book, Old Earth, Why Not, in the free ebook download. The odds, for instance, it was predicted 1,000 years before he was crucified and resurrected that he would ride into town on a donkey. He would be, wounded in his hands and feet. He'd be betrayed by his friends. He'd return 30 pieces of silver, literally, to pay for foreigners' burial plots. On and on, like 48 like that. Now, the odds of them being fulfilled as they were are astronomically high, so obviously it's beyond chance. And as I stated, the Dead Sea Scrolls, those are acknowledged, which have those prophecies as they are in our modern Bible, virtually the same. Commonly acknowledged to being written 300 to 100 BC.
So what you're saying is the scenario I just painted is...
it's a moot point. The prophecies that we say predicted Christ's incarnation and crucifixion, all the circumstances around it, in our Bible, the prophecies that we're reading in our Old Testament day are is the same stuff that was recorded by those guys in Israel 300 BC to 100 BC, you know, centuries before it actually happened.
Mm-hmm. Now, did any other religions predict that, or?
No, only the Hebrew prophets. The Hebrew prophets. But you know, the three wise men, I think, because the Jews had been conquered and were exiled to Babylon, I think the Babylonians learned a lot. So that we might call Old Testament evangelism. And I think those magi, those three magi, those wise men, knew what was up. So, yeah, there were others who learned it from the Hebrews, though.
Yeah, I thought of that myself. That's an interesting point. Now, let me ask you an off-the-wall question. Well, it's not off-the-wall to me, but some people will take it as that. The star that the wise men were following, I've wondered, and I've heard...
Do you think it was... Anyway, go ahead. My thesis is that he was crucified in 32 A.D., but anyway, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Right. Well, I'm wondering what you think of the idea that that was a spaceship, the star that the three wise men, and it was a spaceship, obviously, of some heavenly technology, spiritual technology that we couldn't even understand because it would be, in Christian terms, of God's realm, which was bringing Jesus or Jesus' soul to Earth or something. What do you think about this idea?
Well, I think UFOs. I saw one actually when I was 12 years old, but I think they're spiritual manifestations. I don't think they're physical, and that's A. And then B, I don't think. God said it in the Bible. You know, it was a star. So be it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I like it. Good. Now, when you say there's spiritual manifestations, I want to go with this for a second. The obvious question then is, are you a Christian part of God's realm or the other, the underworld?
I think it's the other guys, the fallen ones.
Yeah, there's a really interesting book. Oh, man, where is it on my shelf here? It's by Brother Michael Diamond, which I have read. He was on Coast to Coast, and how I found out about that book. And he has the same thesis, and I read the book very skeptical, thinking, yeah, this will be ridiculous.
I think I thumbed through that one without even recalling the author. Yeah, quite compelling. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah,
I can't remember the title of it though. But I read it, and he described. I saw a UFO back in 2006. I always thought when I saw it was really actually some sort of government craft or something. And the way he described it in his book was, exactly what I saw, and it made me instantly sort of onto that thesis that the UFO phenomenon that millions are seeing is part of. It's a deception. It's a New World Order plan, and therefore what you would maybe call is the devil's plan, which I may go in those terms too, but I'm going to
That falls into in the biblical timeline, the way I interpret it, after that Ezekiel 38 war, that's when that the good guy, the great peacemaker, steps up, the Antichrist, said I'll fix all this, see?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the 7 years starts.
Now, let me get this straight. Now, I'm not, much more about this, so I'm asking out of ignorance here. Is it the case that it says in the Bible near the end somewhere that the Christians are going to be deceived by the Antichrist?
If it were possible. It says they will be deceived. They would be deceived if it were possible, I think. And there would be a great falling away. That's a big murky area, to tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bible also says, for instance, that there will be people who will be cast into hell and say, but God, I cast out devils in your name. But God says, well, I never knew you. The implication being that the word of God can do that work, even though the one uttering those words actually isn't a child of God.
Mm-hmm. James, with all your knowledge of prophecy, and everything else that we've been discussing, give us what you think the future of America is in just clear and simple terms.
I'll tell you what, I'm real encouraged. I think we're going to be... I'm actually encouraged now since we're rebuffing this, communist medical plan, or socialist, or whatever, fascist, or whatever else you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But what I'm afraid of, I differ with you on our involvement in the Middle East. I think, Obama wants us to pull out of there. And I think we do, that's when the blank's going to hit the fan, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I'm pretty encouraged by the open carry. I'm a huge pro-Second Amendment.
And they weren't inside the town hall. They were 100 yards away, and I can guarantee you those security guys would have got hold of them in the time they were any too close, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's not a Second Amendment issue in that scenario. It's presidential security at that point. You know, if his security detail, you know, felt, well, we need 100 more yards, then by God, they'd move them back.
I just like it that it actually prompted me to go look up here in Indiana. I have what I thought was a concealed carry permit in my wallet, and I called my police chief, and he said, no, look more closely at it. It's a handgun permit. He said, you can carry that as open as you want. You can carry any one of your guns as open as you want anywhere. Expect people to stare and even call the police and, you know, all that.
Sure.
But it's legal and you can do whatever you want. Now,
well, that's what makes America great, man.
Exactly.
We're the only country that has this.
That's why we're the...
And we're about the only country that doesn't have socialized medicine either, yet.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. When something like that happens...
Oh, watch it. They may backdoor it. See, when they can over-regulate the insurance companies right out of business, bro, and then they'd have to step in to bail them out. So keep an eye on that.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah. Well, let's get back to last week when we left you. We were talking about what I think is one of the most shocking discoveries ever that I've ever run into. And it's only shocking because I've been taught for, you know, since I was just after a fetus, that the dinosaurs lived 60-some million years ago and blah, blah, blah.
Fetus, incidentally, means baby. It's the Greek for baby.
Isn't that
wild?
Yeah, that is interesting.
Huh. Go ahead.
So that's a little bit of a thorn for our...
That's
for
a little ouch, yeah, for the, at least provided everybody's literate on Greek, you know.
Yeah, somehow I think the pro-abortion crowd thinks that the second you go through some magical transformation, when you're inside your mother...
It's when the government says you become a human is when you become a human. Didn't you know?
Yeah. Thanks for letting me know. I just didn't realize it.
Didn't you realize it's at 6 months? And, but see, at 5 months, 29 days, and 59 minutes, you're not. But a minute after that, you are, see?
Yeah, unbelievable. I'm at the point of thinking Americans will tell themselves whatever they want or whatever they're told.
Yeah.
But back to this dinosaur discovery, I've got on antimatterradio.com, if you go to the news section there at the top of the site, there scroll down a little bit and you'll see I've got four stories there from Smithsonian, NewScientist.com, which is a pretty interesting academic scientific journal. Science Now, which is also academic, and the National Geographic, all stories about this blood tissue, for lack of a better phrase, that was found in T-Rex.
Blood, red corpuscles, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that's, to tell you the truth, Jim, I'm sitting here just wondering what to do with this information, because that gives a whole lot of power to your, not just, like I was saying, I don't know if you were on yet, but I was saying I kind of think the Earth is maybe 100,000 or 200,000 years old. Yeah, but that sure does give a lot of power to your 6,000 number.
Yeah, particularly when you realize that ancient civilizations sprang up all of a sudden right around 2300 BC, and they all have legends of a global flood.
And dragons.
And dragons, which are dinosaurs, means terrible lizard. That word was coined by Sir Richard Owen in 1841. Before that, they were known as dragons. Chapter 1 of my free ebook, Download Old Earth, Why Not, I have a whole chapter based on Cooper's After the Flood of all the European and dragon sightings and encounters through the centuries. One that comes to mind, Cassius Dio, recorded that Regulus, a Roman general, was over in North Africa fighting Carthage around 200 BC, and a dragon crept up behind the legions, and they slew it, and they skinned it, and they took the skin to the Roman Senate, where it was measured at 120 feet.
Yeah, very interesting. You know what's most interesting about this is that's one of the most earth... I mean, I could rattle off 100 absolutely shocking news articles that are hidden from the mainstream media. This is the most. I mean, why don't they just now? Of course,
it made it for half a day, bro.
Like
on page 18. Yeah, they can say they reported it. See.
Yeah, I mean they put it on NationalGeographic.com and then it goes to the bottom of the page and whoever really even saw it. So in other words, I just call that unreported. I mean, front page of the New York Times for a week. You know,
Explanation from the Darwinists of how that could have possibly happened. That's what I want to hear. How do they explain that with their timeline? You know, we haven't heard a one try to explain it, have we?
Well, not only from the Darwinists, but just anybody who's advocating that they live millions and
well,
millions
I meant a Darwinist timeline, you know, that old Earth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I mean, without being antagonistic, I mean, part of me wants to be antagonistic to them and say, come on, you know, you've been lying to us all these years. But another part of me just says, help. Help me explain. I mean, because if you don't, I've got to.
Yeah, and see, their silence and their inability to explain it speaks volumes, doesn't it? Because if they had a ready explanation, that would have been front page news for months.
Yeah, like, yep. They would have been, like they did with the Crystal Skulls when that Indiana Jones movie, they came out with phony explanations that were all over the news, but they can't even do that with this. And the silence is very loud, to say the least.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's, that notion never crystallized in my mind, but where is their response?
Yeah, yeah. It's, I'm actually going to go down to Purdue University here, which is just a couple minutes from my house, and I'm going to throw some of these at some people and say, I want answers. And I might even put, you know, record it and put it on YouTube or something, because they'll probably just...
Absolutely. That would be awesome.
They'll probably all run away.
Yeah, they will. They will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no question.
They will. Get one of them on to wear a burka so they can go unidentified.
Yeah. So, James, what do you think about... there's some what I call conspiracy theorists like David Icke who say that, I mean, okay, so on the one hand, let me rephrase this. On the one hand, the Bible says Satan is the ruler of this world, and I'll just tell you, I'm pretty solidly in agreement with that biblical position. Okay, and then you have on the other hand some pretty famous what are called conspiracy theorists. I use that term very. In a very kind and praiseworthy way, like David Icke, who says that some of the people that control the world are actually not humans. They're disguised as, like, demonic lizard-type creatures. Do you think there's any – it's hard to talk about this because people blush and giggle, and, you know, this is so foreign to what – even though every single religion in the world is – well, not every single. There's many religions in the world who predict this. The Bible probably does in the most explicit and detailed and accurate way. But what do you think about it? I tend to think there's some credibility to this, even though it's not in our news and it's foreign to our academic institutions and nobody's discussing it. What do you think about this idea?
Oh, I think probably the Antichrist will do the Dante's Inferno deal with the devil, and he actually does get possessed. The Bible says, you know, the Satan does enter him, you know, at 3.5 years into the tribulation when he goes sour on us, on who's left. And, see what we were talking about. But his minions, you know, these people are just, you know, I think they're basically greed and power oriented is basically it. There's a few at the top, I think, that really know what's going on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think they're basically, you know, it's like any gang, you know, the guys at the top know what's really going on and the rest are just, you know, worker bees, basically.
You got it. Yep. Yeah, I think there's something, some kind of possession or there's some power and there's
well, it's the confidence. These people may really have themselves convinced that they know how to run the world better than nation states do with democracies and, you know, running at a local level, essentially. They actually may think they can run it well. You know, when history is just a litany of failed central government control. You know, and central government control never works.
Yeah, I mean, look at the world now. We got starvation, poverty, war, disease.
Yeah, I thought the UN was and UNICEF was handling all of that, right?
You got it. Yeah, I mean, you've got...
They're doing a bang-up job, aren't they?
Well, when you read in the Bible, it says Satan is the god of this world. It kind of makes a little bit of sense all of a sudden when you look at the news and look at these idiots that are running things. I mean, these aren't...
And who are the racists? Who are the racists? Is these, you know, Africa's just been a killing field.
Yep.
You know, and who are the people sitting back with their hands crossed, claiming that they care about the black people?
Yeah, well, isn't
the progressives, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Odinga has some kind of strong friendship and/or relations with Obama, and he was.
Well, hell, he was over there campaigning for Odinga in the 2006. That's when he got caught in his turban outfit, and Team Obama said, "Oh, somebody leaked the photo." Well, what do they have to be ashamed of?
Exactly. Well, I mean, then Odinga, he's just a mass murderer, you know.
Well, he made a pact with the Sharia law guys, you know, that if you guys you help me get elected, I'll have Sharia law in Kenya.
Well, let me ask you something else on a religious question, Jim. I'm really interested to see what your take is on this. Now, and I'm asking out of ignorance again, because I don't simply know. Now, when we're, I've heard, okay, in the Bible, doesn't it say Lucifer is something associated with the power of light or something?
Yeah, well, Lucifer means the shining one. You know, the, you know, that's where he comes as an angel of light, but he's
okay.
Really the deceiver. Yeah, that
okay.
He became Lucifer after he fell. He was Satan, and then when he fell, he became Lucifer.
Okay, now that's the first part of my question. The second part is two-parted. Now, we know Saul, or Paul, or whatever you want to call him, on his way to Damascus, had a vision of God and called it light. And that's
right.
The first part. And then the next thing is, as I've said, I'm a Buddhist, and I meditate quite strongly, and I have a lot of experiences which sure do seem, you know, if you meditate long enough, all of a sudden you're sitting there in your room, and you kind of feel this light, and you the word you want to give it often is God. I mean, it just has this...
Yeah, supernatural,
happiness.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, it almost just kind of makes you feel like you're doing what Paul was doing. So, so now we've got Lucifer experiencing God. Experiencing light, and me.
Yeah, the light that Paul saw. Let me clear this one up real fast. The light that Paul saw, then he became Paul at that moment. The light that he saw, Jesus identified him. Said, "Paul, Paul, why do you persecute me?" And he knew. It's written that he knew that was Jesus.
So you're saying there's two forces of spiritual light. One.
Yeah, yeah. Satan comes as an angel of light, thus saith the scriptures.
Mm-hmm. So how about this idea then that there's a war between spiritual... I mean, let me just say that I'm asking because I think this is what's really going on. Behind the scenes and just behind the curtain of the... egotistical, you know, Americans' perspective. There's
right.
a spiritual war going on everywhere between pretty. It's pretty much what you find in the Bible. I'm obviously
absolutely
agree with that.
The rise and fall of Israel with their belief and unbelief through the centuries after King David. You know, when all the prophets were living, just like a big soap opera, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they move away from God. Bad stuff would happen. But they move back close to God. Things would go good. Yeah, it's quite predictable, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what we're seeing as the New World Order is sort of the tip of the iceberg of what the dark spiritual force is. I'm pretty convinced of that because this... let me ask you another question, Jim. Tell us exactly why Atlantis... Let me move to a discussion about Atlantis. I want to just get everything in here I've got
sure.
on this list. Why exactly did it fall?
Because the Ice Age ended. Actually, much later than mainstream scientists are telling us.
I mean, but the Ice Age ending, how was it submerged by water? And if so, how come they couldn't, why do you think they couldn't just move to another place? If they were so advanced, how could they not?
Oh, they were just one of many seafaring cultures. In fact, in Plato's story, the warfare between Atlantis and Athens, what he calls Atlantis, of course, Athens back then actually was just a little, you know, village. But the coastal cities of Greece at that time are now underwater. There's submerged ruins all off Greece, just as there are submerged ruins all off Spain and Morocco as well, also underreported, because they're Bronze Age vintage. You know, big square rock-hewn blocks, megalithic, cyclopean, if you will, at multiple locations. You know, virtually proving in and of itself that the Ice Age ended much later than popular advertised, when the sea level rose several hundred feet to submerge, you know, some say up to 20 million square miles of land. You know, so that's was the downfall of Atlantis when they were, you know, it's a naval warfare, Bronze Age naval warfare between Greece and Atlantis at that time. You know, Atlantis outside the Pillars of Hercules, as well as inside the Pillars of Hercules, Plato wrote. And he also mentioned that it's an island, but he also mentioned that it was an island, and the circular city of Poseidon, you know, with the ring canals around it,
mm-hmm.
was at the southern end of that island, and north of it was a plain 200 miles by 300 miles, and north of it was a mountain range where all the rich mining activity was for Atlantis. And that's the Sierra Morena and Sierra Nevada mountains of central Spain. So that, you know, there are multi levels or layers, if you will, to Plato's description of Atlantis. And he said it went under 9,000 years before Plato's time, as reported by the Egyptian priests. But he also mentions that the kings Erisichthon, Erectius, Erectonius, and sea crops were alive in that time frame, and they're known to have lived in the 1400 BC time frame. So, you know, Plato's story, once you fix the date, which he obviously had wrong, and he should have known it, he knew those kings were not, they had no history 9,000 years ago, as did not the Egyptians as well. Under category Atlantis Revealed at dancingfromgenesis.com, I totally deconstruct this Atlantis story to where it actually does conform with the Genesis account. But it is as simple as that. Ice Age ended much later than the experts are telling us.
Again, everybody, we're talking to James Nienhuis, IceAgeCivilizations.com. And what was the other website, your blog website you mentioned?
Dancing from Genesis, GENESIS.com.
I've had a chance. Some of Jim's books are available for free on his website, so you should all go check them out. And if you can, maybe buy them, because people like me and Jim need money to research. We're not funded by,
You don't have your grant, tenure grant coming in from Cornell?
The Carnegie didn't give me anything yet. So, no, not. Now, Jim, what do you think about 2 weeks ago when we had Walter Cruttenden on, we were talking about the Sphinx, and John Anthony West, and then there's some others, but mainly John Anthony West talks about how the Sphinx appears to be much older than the academics want to say it is, because it's got evidence of rainwater damage on the side.
Right.
How, if you're familiar with this issue, how does this couple, because I think it's pretty solid work that they've done, and it really seems to show that the Sphinx is a lot older than everybody thinks. How does this couple with 6,000-year-old Earth?
Well, you can't say necessarily that it's a lot older than the experts are saying, but you can say that there was definitely water erosion, i.e. much more rainfall in Egypt after it had been constructed. You can't say that. So I go along with the mainstream scientist line that all those structures were built, you know, 2200 BC, right in that time frame, along with the Great Pyramid. But since the Ice Age was ongoing in that time frame, there was much more rainfall in the middle latitudes. So you've heard of the Aqualithic period of the Sahara, when the Sahara was a vast chain of connected lakes and marshes and interconnecting streams, when there was maybe 40 inches of rain falling where now 5 does. Well, that was during Old Kingdom Egypt, when there was much more rainfall in the Sphinx quarry as well. So that's why you have all that obvious heavy rainfall water erosion there, from when there was much more rainfall, actually during the Ice Age, which ended, you know, much later than they're telling us.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you think about all this design, I brought up those issues of design earlier on purpose because, well, I'm pretty interested in them. They kind of tell the story of what's really going on, and it's not a spontaneously undirected solution.
Random.
Yeah,
a result of random molecular movements.
Yeah, right. What you're going to want to say, well, this is obvious evidence for design. What's to keep me from saying, no, that's evidence that there was an alien civilization, which some of the ancient religions talk about, that designed it, not an all-powerful creator. Now, I know some answers to this, but I'm wondering what you think.
There's no need for that. That is my simple answer. You know, that ancient mapping finding that I described where they could measure the Earth accurately within 0.5% by the Earth's wobble rate, that explains all the unusually precise orientations and dimensions of the most ancient megalithic structures. And also it explains the maps of the ancient sea kings, which were compiled by Charles Hapgood, showing Antarctica, you know, from ancient source maps, even when all the snow and ice had yet to build up on Antarctica, that is to say, showing the coastlines accurately of Antarctica, which are now under thousands of feet of snow and ice. That ancient mapping finding explains that too, how they were able to achieve that. And note the world, the geography of the world during the Ice Age, actually.
So you're basically saying there's not a need, we don't have...
Technologically, no. The only great conundrum that I can see is how the hell did they, like those little diorite bowl, you know, vases that unbelievable spinning power for a drill bit and the hardness of the drill bit necessitated. But from what I gather, by a series of coordinated, geared, if you will, you know, ropes and levers and whatnot, you know, you can do stuff like that. But it just takes incredible know-how and incredible patience and, you know, some muscle.
How about the crystal skulls?
Not that familiar, but from what I can tell, the original was a legitimate find, and maybe there were a lot of copies thereafter for commercial purposes. Am I close, do you think?
Yeah, the Crystal Skulls has me baffled. I think it's
you know, from my perspective, if it presuming it is true, yeah, it's just a fine ritual ornament. I don't see what the big deal is.
Mm-hmm. How about here's a one I'm really wondering what you think about. The Bible seems to have two human creation stories in it. One is in Genesis 1, and one is in early Genesis 6. What in the world is going on in Genesis 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, Genesis 6, 1 through 6, where they talk about this group of giants or fallen angels that is responsible for creating humans? Was there two of, is this
not responsible for creating humans, for interbreeding with them, I think you mean.
Were they, what I always take this as is there was a creation story in Genesis 1 and then later a takeover, like when, you know,
No, I haven't studied that recently, and when I forgot what I had learned, but mostly. But I think the explanation is one is looking at it from like an Earth view, and one is looking like from a detached view. And I can't go into further detail on that. But it's coming maybe from God's orientation and from man's orientation, or something along that line. But it's supposedly a great sticking point, but it's easily explained. Yeah, your listeners might want to Google. You know, how would you term it? Two creation stories, reconciliation, maybe Google something like that.
Yeah, I don't think it's a sticking point. I think there's something to be learned from Genesis.
I'll study that. If you ever have me back, I'll make a note, and I'll actually blog about it. So dancingfromgenesis.com. It'll be up in a day or two. I'll tell you what I find out there then.
Yeah, I think it just sort of correlates to a lot of what we've been talking about, how there's sort of a behind-the-scenes war or something that seems to fall. It's almost as if the Bible is telling us about that. And there's that whole book of Enoch.
Oh, man, talk about telling about it, and it's predicting all of it on top of all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an amazing book. You know, and curiously, or not curiously, let me add this. You know, a lot of Jews saw Christ as the fulfillment of prophecy. They had read Daniel 9 and knew it, that he would be cut off or crucified 483 years after the command to rebuild the temple after the Babylonian captivity. They were expecting him. So a lot of anthropologists or ancient demographic experts estimate that maybe up to a third of Jerusalem became Christians, you know, in the decades after the resurrection.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Jim, is the very, besides prophecy, what other good indications tell you that the Bible is a book of history, not a book of fairy tales?
Well, I guess the great layer.
Several, but I want to hear some more.
What's that?
We mentioned several, but I wonder if you have any more.
The great archaeologists in the Middle East, Layard and Wolseley, and several others, you know, who discovered Nineveh and discovered ancient Sumerian civilization, the locals didn't have a clue that stuff was there. They did not have a clue. But guess who found the stuff? It's the Europeans with their Book of Genesis, following the roadmap they're in.
Yeah, I was aware of that, and I thought you might bring that up. That's it's also curious that that's not more widely discussed. And you can even I was actually a master's student in comparative religion at Western Michigan University for a year before I quit that program because I out of pure disgust. And I was surprised. I mean, they wouldn't talk about anything. I mean, this is so foreign to any. I mean, it's just simple archaeology. They would not talk about any of this stuff. I mean, all they would want to do is interpret a word in some passage of some religious text for, you know, 4 months.
Well, according to what I just said about those guys in the 1800s, it's obviously an accurate history book. After all, they uncovered a whole civilizations using it as a roadmap. And along that line, too, I just saw a great article in the USA Today mentioning that, you know, people say, oh, keep the Bible out of school, keep the Bible out of school. Well, you can't understand Shakespeare or Wordsworth or any of the great British authors without having a working knowledge of the Bible, you know, on top of the fact that it's a great roadmap for ancient history, as I just cited.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's the backbone of Western civilization, whether you like it or not, and actually of a lot of the history in the rest of the world as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Nestorian Christians, 600 A.D., you know, work in West Asia. Big part of what had to do in Asia at that time. Anyway, go ahead.
What do you think, James, about the... This one's really got me, because I find Christians attack me on this all the time. It seems to me, from my study of myself and meditation and the study of people and the study of the Bible, that... humans are spiritual. They're in God's image. Not, I mean, we can think of ourselves as sinners, but at the same time, there's something special, godlike, and spiritual about us. I mean, you look at a passage like Colossians 3:11, where it says that, you know, Christ is all, is Jew, Gentile, and so forth. And John 10:34, Jesus tells the angry mob of people that they are gods. And then Genesis 1, it says we were created in Elohim's image. So, I mean, I think the whole idea of man, the sinner, the human as a sinner, it, you know, fine, whatever. I mean, it, look around the world, it's pretty obvious we're pretty flawed. But I think we're missing the whole point that there's something godlike in us. I'm accused usually by Christians of being a horrible New Age heretic that's, you know,
right.
Hell for that.
Right.
What do you think about this whole issue?
Well, Jesus, you know, told the Pharisees, who ostensibly should have some, you know, deity in them, good deity in them. You know, he told them, your father's the devil. You know, so there you go.
Mm-hmm. Explain that. Can you explain that in different words? I'm not sure if I understand.
Well, just in terms of at that time, well, there were Old Testament believers, you know, in Jesus Christ looking forward to his sacrifice. You know, that's what the believing Hebrews, they were sanctified or saved, if you will, because they had faith that the Messiah would come. And then after the resurrection, you're judged upon, you know, what you do with Jesus Christ. You know, do you accept his claims, you know, and ask him to change your life, or do you not? So those Pharisees, they were in that position then. You know, lots of people were realizing he is the Messiah, and they had a choice to make. You know, at that point, they were his fervent enemy. You know, so in, you know, instead of going with the flow of what, you know, coulda, shoulda, woulda been, of course, Christ, you know, gave himself up to die for us. But, you know, they had their choice, you know, and at that point, they were, their father was Satan. Now, that, the Bible doesn't tell if they changed their mind. You know, they may have repented and, you know, accepted Jesus later on. Mm-hmm. But at that point in time, their father was Satan, as Jesus reported.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you one last question. There are passages such as, I'm looking here, I think it's...
Mm-hmm. You know, Islam and Muhammad, you know, they convert by the sword. See, and what really... pisses me off, frankly, is what I'm called a fundamentalist in the same vein that Al-Qaeda headcutter offers. Now, see, the difference is Christians attack, if there's any attacking, by the word, by preaching the word. You know, you can tell us to shut up and go away or whatever. That's fine. That's all we're doing. We're not putting a sword at people's throats and saying you do want to follow Allah, don't you? So, anyway, I had to get that off my chest.
Yeah, that's a... I would think that's an absurd comparison. Probably anybody who's making a comparison.
Well, they hearken back to the Catholics, you know, in the 1600s, the Inquisition.
Right.
But those days are gone, and they were arguably weren't even Christians at all. So anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I wonder how much the Crusade. I mean, when I look at the way we've got a New World Order now, that's a secret government, and we did then, and the way the New World Order now is slaughtering people in the Middle East and Africa. I wonder if it wasn't the same operations back then. You know, you wonder.
Yeah, well,
how...
there's a lot of the secret society stuff, and there probably
yep.
are a lot of parallels and roots in there. Somehow.
They probably just later on said, "Oh, it was a Christian mission," and then you know, and now everybody's believing that in their history books. But I don't have any proof for this. This is speculation. But man, you look at present day stuff; it sure does sound like a pretty decent theory.
And if you wanted to rule the world or run the world, wouldn't you like to base it out of Jerusalem and say all the other religions point to me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is what the Antichrist will say. You know,
if I wanted
Jerusalem to be a plum, yeah.
If I wanted to rule the world, Jim, what I would do is I would hijack the biggest religion, distort it, get everybody to follow me, and then I could do whatever I wanted.
Well, that's probably what's happening with the falling away in Christendom, because, you know, we embrace Darwinism. You know, many of us say, oh, well, I don't know about the Virgin Mary. You know, just totally watering down the basic tenets. So, yeah, that probably is happening. You're probably right.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think is going on, that's for sure. You look at some of our spiritual leaders like Pat Robertson. I mean, he wrote a book called The New World Order. I don't know if you knew that or not. I mean, that guy is bad news. I mean, he's one of the biggest Christian leaders in America. So, I mean, there are signs of what I just said. I could go on with other ones. Let me ask you one more question, which I find extremely interesting. I hope you remember that I forwarded you this. I'd be asking you this question. In Isaiah 6, 1 and 2, the Bible refers to some of the angels as being dragons or seraphs. I find that pretty interesting. What do you think about that?
Dragons or seraphs? I didn't look that one up. I forgot to. So, you know what the definition of seraphs is? Seraphim, that's just angels, right?
Isn't it a six-winged dragon angel or something? Something like that.
Six-winged dragon angel. Wow, I'm going to have to let you down on that one.
Well, it's almost as if the Bible talked about their flying serpents and their flying dragon beasts, which seemed to be physical. And then you have passages like Isaiah 6.
You know what? I bet those are serpents of wisdom. You know, Satan masquerading, the angel of light. I bet those, in half the world, the serpent was seen as, wisdom and goodness. You know, and like in other parts of the world, they're seen as evil. That's an interesting study in and of itself. But
yeah.
I think that's what that is. And then the six arms, interesting, my little hexagon mapping system, isn't that interesting, six-sided and hexagon, from whence the probably Phoenician Mogen David, Star of David, that's probably based upon that hexagon mapping system as well. So an ancient navigating Phoenicians, you know, who helped King David. Go ahead.
I have to ask you one more question, this one. Now, I assume that you think, of course, hell is very literal, just like it says in the Bible. Where is it? Is it really under the ground, or is it another dimension? What do you think?
Well, when that happens, cast into the lake of fire, there will be a new heaven and a new earth. So I guess it's just kind of pushing the reset button, and we really don't have a take on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, interesting. Is there anything else, Jim, that you want listeners to know about you, about your research, anything? You've got the floor. You can say anything you want.
Sure. You can virtually prove the accuracy of the Genesis account by just the three big points that I've been hitting on, that there are submerged ruins that were clearly built during the Bronze Age, you know, the large block brick and stone, well-hewn cities like you see in a Greek movie, submerged. You know, since the end of the Ice Age. That proves the Ice Age ended much later than the scientists are telling us. And then when you think about it, only a warmer ocean could have produced all the clouds by evaporation off the ocean for the Ice Age. You have to have a lot of clouds, and the only way you get a lot of clouds is by a warmer ocean. And that warmer ocean geothermally heated through the fountains of the deep of Noah's flood. It's hydrology 101. At the close of the flood, the oceans were warmer, and that was the engine for the Ice Age. Plus, my ancient mapping finding, you can tie it all together explaining how they were measuring and mapping the world during the Ice Age, which is actually around 2000 BC, with the flood, Noah's flood, around 2400 BC, and the Ice Age ending at 1500 BC. If you use that template, it falls right in line with the evidence in what's written in Genesis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Jim, give us your websites one more time and tell us about your books once more.
Okay, dancingfromgenesis.com. That's my blog site, blog posts under various categories, Atlantis Revealed, Catastrophic Climate Change, Ages of Things, Submerged Ancient Ruins, and Current Events as well. I comment on the news as well there at dancingfromgenesis.com. And then at iceagecivilizations.com, just click on article number 2, and you can see there's only two articles there. Click on article number 2, and there's that ancient mapping finding. Go over to that, and you can see the numbers that the Egyptians and the ancient Greeks were using are the numbers that we're currently using in our nautical mile mapping system. no coincidence, because both are based upon timekeeping. Currently, solar transit time, but back in the day, back the time of Abraham, when they were building the pyramids and whatnot, measuring time by the wobble rate of the Earth's axis as manifested by the apparent movement of the constellations from year to year. So, that dancingfromgenesis.com.
Excellent. Well, we really appreciate you spending these 2 hours with us. This has been spectacular, and you fit right into this radio show. We'd like to bring out the most empirical and shocking information. Shocking because it's what's hidden from everybody, not that it's extreme in nature or anything. It's just the more truth that's hidden, when you see it, it appears more shocking to you.
It's common sense stuff. That's what's, it's just it's a crying shame. It's just common sense stuff. You know, it does not speak well for intellectual honesty.
No, I taught in academia for 8 years at Purdue University, Indiana University, and Grand Valley State, and there is no such thing as intellectual honesty. What there is professors running around scared of the administrators and scared they're not publishing enough and scared they're going to get castigated if they don't fit into the established theories.
Just trying to stay within the confines of the maze.
You got it. Well, Jim, thanks a lot for being with us, and everybody should check out antimatterradio.com. You can get this show in the archives if you want to listen to it in the future at some point. And thanks very much again, James.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
All right.
Well, let's talk about a couple more things here before we close out this show today. Next week, I've got tentatively planned to discuss numerology, sacred geometry, and consciousness. That may or may not take place, that show. It just depends if I'm ready to go over that critical issue, which I'm very excited about. If it doesn't get discussed next week, it'll be shortly after, because that's going to be a bombshell, that show. It's going to be a many-part show. And look for many extremely good guests as we've had the last 3 weeks and the upcoming weeks. I've got a couple real big ones in the works. I'd love to tell you who they are, but I need to get them booked to make sure they're really coming on before I announce it. And again, the website for this radio show is antimatterradio.com, and at that website you can find out everything you need to know about this show. There's a store you can buy any books that are related to the information on this show, and this show is supposed to be about attaining some spiritual happiness. We live in a time where much of the human race is quite lost, quite confused. They seem to think that going to work at a job that you don't like every day, day in and day out, ignoring your family, we seem to think that's normal now. And we think that 20% of Americans on these pathetic antidepressants is normal. We seem to think that all this war is normal. Well, that is normal, but only from the government's perspective. It's not normal from the perspective of just ordinary humans who want to love each other, have farms, and carry out commerce, raise children, and be at peace. Because the average person in the world, there is no question, those are the things they want. They want religion, they want family, they want security, they want profundity, and they want to feel good. Feeling good doesn't mean taking a bunch of drugs like cocaine and ruining your life. Feeling good means spiritual freedom. Deep within inside of you, as I was just discussing with James Nienhuis in that incredible discussion, just as it says in the Bible, you are created in the image of the Most Holy. Okay, it says, I quoted the passages in that in the Bible where it says that. And you can verify that for yourself if you carry out some Buddhist meditation. Buddhist meditation prompts you to look within. As my book, Telementation, describes, you can pick that book up for $9 on Amazon.com or go to telementation.com to read about it. The inside of all of you is a spiritual center. It's non-physical. You can experience it, and it's beautiful, and it's utter happiness. And when you get to that point, even if you just glimpse it, you start to realize that you're onto something big, and you start to realize that everything you've been told about, all this materialism and all this consumerism and all this violence and war and all this garbage you've been told about the world through your life is nothing but a total lie, because the destiny of humans is to be free, happy, spiritualized, and ecstatic. That is our normal state. Any of you listening to this radio show think that your normal state of consciousness is to be one where you feel unhappiness and misery, confusion, desperation, and panic and desire? You are wrong. the only reason you think that's normal is because everybody you see around you in the world is living under the same illusion. So therefore, since everybody's doing it, you think it's normal, but it is not normal. It is abnormal. The history of humans, as we discussed 2 weeks ago with Walter Cruttenden, is one of bliss and joy, profundity, intelligence, and spiritualization. That is what none of you have lived until you're going through your daily life thinking, I want to carry out my meditation session because that's when I am most at peace. That's when I am who I am. I want to learn to do the spiritual arts such as described in Christianity and Buddhism and Hinduism. I want to carry out these disciplines because that is when I feel most alive, and that's when I feel true peace. It almost becomes not an addiction, but a positive obsession, sort of in the way you want to listen to the most beautiful music because it relaxes you and brings you at peace and clears your mind in the evenings. Some of you may come to look forward to doing that every evening. That's what we're talking about, except it's in a totally higher order of magnitude, the spiritual technologies that have been described in the world's religions. All of us in the world, I think, are starting a spiritual renaissance, and I think we're going to get to this point pretty quick. I think it's already started, but we all need to understand the true nature of what it says in, for example, Colossians 3:11, where in that verse Jesus tells you there's no mincing words there on the part of, like I said, it was Jesus, I think it's St. Paul who's talking, says that Christ is all, Jew, Gentile, and so forth. People are God, it says that. Now, does that mean that you literally, God is inside of you? I have no idea if that's what it means. All I know is that it says in Genesis 1, and it says in the Buddhist texts and the Hindu texts and the Native American religions and so forth, that there's something powerful and huge and spiritual about who and what you are. And this is what we need to find out as human beings. That is the point of history and the point of our religion. Okay, so a number of points that I wanted to touch on with respect to what we've discussed the last couple weeks on the Antimatter Radio Show is we'll cover some of these in more detail here in the near term. But there are certain things, like let's take afterlife, for example. We're told in biology, in the universities, on TV that we are our brain, we are matter, we are flesh. But of course, as we've discussed on past shows, there's absolutely no evidence for that, because if there was, then if I cut open your head, I could see your thoughts and feelings. I could see love, and I could see you thinking about the number two or whatnot. You can't, so therefore there's evidence that your consciousness is non-physical. And this spiritual center, which I've just got done discussing for the last 10 minutes, is also something non-physical. Okay, so that leads to the question, the obvious question. If the body dies, as we all know that our bodies will, and we've seen others die, if the body dies and decays and fades away, what happens to this spiritual source, this spiritual center? Because there's no requirement that it die if it is non-physical. If it's a different order of stuff, quote-unquote, than the flesh body. So it appears that another area of study that is ripe for massive discovery and massive pioneering is the study of afterlife. There's been many who have already gone this route, those who have studied deathbed visions, EVP, electronic voice phenomenon, near-death experiences, and so forth. Especially deathbed visions, there seems to be some really powerful evidence for afterlife. But philosophically as well, there's powerful evidence that, in the philosophical sense of evidence, that there is something continuous about us, that we may have existed before our bodies, and maybe we will exist after our bodies. There are just all sorts of profound issues, which all of us deep down know should be investigated, and we know that there's something to them, which come out of a discussion such as we've had with Cruttenden and Nienhuis over the last 3 weeks on the Antimatter Radio Show. these issues are, it must be investigated. I mean, this is what living is all about. This is important to our lives. I mean, we must know these things, and or at the least, we must have a better understanding of them, regardless if we know them fully or not. Because this is studying ourselves. If you watch television and watch all your Michael Jackson coverage on Fox News for, you know, a week, the only thing that's only going to cause you tremendous confusion, and it's going to destroy your life inadvertently and indirectly. Because you won't know anything about yourself, you won't know anything about the world, therefore you won't know how to navigate through the world if you don't know anything about it. You won't know how to navigate yourself in situations because you won't know at all who yourself is. So these are huge, tremendous issues which must be explored. And as some of you have heard me say in past shows, I hold predictions that we are going through a spiritual renaissance. It has begun. It probably started back before World War II, but especially got rolling after World War II. When I say spiritual renaissance, I don't mean that all of a sudden it has to blast off and be visible in the news and in the streets everywhere. It can be slow. It may take 100 years. But it's in play, and I think we're going to have new universities in the future which explore some of these issues, these real issues. We don't cover this junk philosophy of global warming, for example, that is pushed on all the kids in universities now, which I discussed about an hour ago on this show. I want to reference the Greenpeace person on the Infowars.com website stating that their data for global warming was actually just made up. This does not help us as humans. Okay, this is not taking control of our souls. This is not guiding our lives into happiness. This is just doing what we're told. This is being slaves, is what it is. And I think we're entering a time when a lot of this is going to fade away, and we're going to gain a lot of power as humans. So, next week on the Antimatter Radio Show, we may have a guest, or we may discuss the numerology program, which I referred to earlier. We'll have to see. Keep your eye on antimatterradio.com for information and show schedule information. And also, you can check out the archives of any of the past shows, which just hit the archives button on top of antimatterradio.com. And keep an eye out for big guests in the future. And we'll keep bringing to you every week earth-shattering bombshell information on this show. Thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to talking to all of you next week on the Antimatter Radio Show.